Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
You're on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the workday afternoon. Today on Health Suites, we look at the health of our children who are back in school. What sort of ailments are affecting them now, and how can parents boost their immunity of their young children? For answers, I'll be speaking to Dr. Ellison Joanne Lee, paediatrician, SBCC Baby and Child Clinic. Coming up next on Money FM 89.3.
Health Suites with Clarissa Montero on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health Suites on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero. On the phone, I'm joined by Dr. Ellison Joanne Lee, paediatrician, SBCC Baby and Child Clinic. Dr. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon, Clarissa. Thank you for having me.
It is absolutely a pleasure. What are parents worried about now with regards to their children's health since circuit breaker has been lifted?
I suppose the first thing and most obvious thing that they are worried about, of course, is the transmission of COVID-19 to their children. Mm-hmm. However, I think parents are actually quite socially conscientious. I think especially after schools restarted, they were more worried about their children being compliant to wearing masks and face shields, hand washing, social distancing. But because children are actually quite resilient and adaptable, I think those concerns were actually pushed aside. For now, the amount of transmissions of infectious diseases has dropped quite dramatically since the circuit breaker has finished. So I think some of the concerns about transmission of COVID-19 have reduced quite a bit.
All right. So the main concern initially was COVID-19 with the kids going back to school. And that hasn't really happened. So parents are there other things that they're concerned about now, common illnesses? Or has it just across the board, because everyone is being more conscientious, has it across the board just you've seen less occurrence of anything that can be transmitted, maybe even things like measles?
So, firstly, yes, definitely any airborne or droplet transmitted virus or infection has gone down, not just for COVID-19, but any sort of other viral ailments that have affected children in the past. For example, even hand foot mouth disease, the common cough and cold caused by other viruses, bronchiolitis, the viral diarrheas and vomiting, all of this has decreased by probably more than 50% if you look at the current numbers. Mm-hmm. It's slowly starting to increase with the amount of time spent in school.
Sure.
But still the numbers, because of all the precautions that have been taken for the COVID-19, are still quite low, definitely less than half of the usual.
Okay, so recently there was some published data from the Ministry of Health which supports what you've just said, which is interesting. Was this expected or did it come as a surprise?
No, I think this was entirely expected. Mm-hmm. All these measures will definitely prevent any sort of infectious disease. So once you try to stop the transmission of COVID-19, the social isolation, obviously the contact is not there. So therefore, the transmission of all the other viruses will also go down. So this is entirely expected. And this is good in a way. It's good for many parents, especially parents of very young children who usually would fall sick every 2 to 3 weeks, monthly, with different types of infections, especially those who go to preschool or kindergarten.
With every variation of sniffles and what have you, right?
Yeah, I would say so, except for dengue, of course, where the numbers have really just skyrocketed this year.
So what are parents coming in for now? If you're seeing a drop in that kind of thing, the sniffles, the coughs, all that related things, what are parents coming in with their children for now? Or have you seen less patients lately?
They are still coming in with similar viral fevers, coughs, runny nose and hand foot mouth disease, of course, to a much less proportion. So yes, our patient numbers, both in the government side as well as the private side, have all dropped. Mm-hmm. What the doctors have to be a little bit more wary of are other types of infections, such as bacterial infections from urinary tract infections, bacterial diarrheas, which are a little bit more going to be relatively more common now just because the others are much less. So we have to be a little bit more cautious on that side to think about other things that might be more common during this period of time where viruses are less easily transmitted because of the precautions.
Okay, why would those be more prevalent now?
It's just because if the risk factors for transmission are low, our radar has to be on a more of alert for the bacterial kind of infections. They won't be more prevalent, but they'll be more likely in a single child. So if a child, for example, presented with 1 or 2 days of fever, you might be, in the past, be able to write that off as a usual viral fever because 90% of the time that would be the case.
Right.
But now, because that is probably less likely the case, you might want to be investigating for a urine infection.
So where is that coming from?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, it's not coming from anywhere. The rates are still the same.
Mm-hmm.
But because the others are less in proportion, you have to have a bit more of an alarm or a radar to look out for these things.
Right. We're speaking with Dr. Alison Joanne Lee, pediatrician, SBCC Baby and Child Clinic. Dr. Lee, you said earlier in the interview that the numbers are coming back up again. Is that directly related to the fact that children have been in school for a while? They have now been interacting with each other for longer, so that you're going to start to see these numbers normalize to what they used to be with all the common colds and sniffles and viral fevers and what have you that you have seen a decline in?
The numbers will come up a bit because even with good hand washing, social distancing, and face masks, once in a while, you know, a bit of a saliva droplet is going to transmit from one kid to another. So we will see an isolated few cases of hand, foot, mouth or viral diarrhea. But as long as these measures are still in place, the numbers will remain down. If these numbers start to go up, that means that people are not practicing what they should be to prevent COVID-19.
Right.
Yeah. What we are seeing a little bit more of an increase in as well are probably children with allergic diseases, for example, asthma or allergic rhinitis, which means sensitive nose. And that might be because children who stay at home are more exposed to aeroallergens such as dust. So some of these children are actually presenting even during circuit breaker due to exacerbations of house dust mite allergy, which triggers their underlying sensitive nose or sensitive lungs. So that might be a little bit higher than usual, perhaps. But most of these are also viral triggers, so it remains about the same as well.
Okay. And what are parents' concerns now? Are they coming to you and asking you how they can boost their child's immunity to protect them further from such things, from any kind of bacterial or viral infection?
I think even before circuit breaker, parents are always trying to look for a way to boost their children's immunity.
Right.
But I would say that during this period especially, there are probably some things that parents have to be wary of, especially as their children are kept more at home and not allowed to go out. I mean, some of these issues I feel are to do with exercise and leading a sedentary lifestyle. Parents really need to be cautious about allowing their children to be at home a little bit too much without doing any exercise, having too much screen time. So obesity, poor diet, not doing exercise is probably going to lower your immunity a lot more than anything you could do, like, for example, during in your diet to intervene and boost the immunity. So, I mean, I think what I would like parents to understand is that even though your children are spending more time at home, there might be less sports, co-curricular activities, for example, you still need to make an effort to give them activities, physical activities to do either at home or in an open area which is not crowded downstairs. You have to keep that active lifestyle going. That would be the best thing to do to boost your child's immunity during this period.
It's funny, and you actually sound like my mother from all those years ago, because a similar thing happened when I was a child and we had to spend a lot of time at home. And I am asthmatic and I did have an allergy to actually the dander on our pet's fur. So her idea of making me stay active was to clean. I had to sweep the house like twice a day or something like that to keep me active.
That's a good exercise for you. That's a good idea, actually.
That's a good idea. Bring out the vacuum cleaner and have your kids do it.
Why not?
But it actually did work because, you know, we come back to what you said about asthma and allergies. They are spending time at home, and so those dust mites might annoy them a little bit more than it would otherwise. Maybe it is also the pet fur that they're suddenly a bit more susceptible to or are reacting a little bit more to So get them to help keep that place cleaner than it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can do what we want, what we can, at home to reduce house dust mites, but it can never be zero.
Absolutely.
So our children with house dust mite allergies or even pet allergy, we do advise them to have an outdoor lifestyle, which may not be so possible at this point in time. Mm-hmm. But if your children, if you do have a space downstairs that they can exercise in, then do it as a family. Do it together within your own group so that, you know, transmission for COVID is still lower or even other infectious diseases, and yet they can still lead a healthy lifestyle. I think parents play a very important role in setting an example in doing this.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those parents who are now dealing with children who are suddenly allergic to, or it seems like they're suddenly allergic to dust mites, for example, and you're right, we can't completely eliminate it from our world. What do they do? Do they have to be on medication? What can they do to sort of alleviate some of the more uncomfortable symptoms of it?
So I think, first of all, you probably would need to see a doctor to fully diagnose an allergic nose, or if you have asthma, because you wouldn't want to embark on, you know, lots of cleaning if it's not necessary. So the second thing would be also to diagnose that your child really does have a house dust mite or a pet allergy from a skin test, for example. Mm-hmm. Because children who don't have these allergies, the parents don't need to do anything, and it could be something else. Some children, yes, would need medications to control the symptoms, especially during circuit breaker where they really couldn't go out at all. However, we can give good advice as to how to reduce the level of dust mites, for example, vacuuming, soft toys, removing rugs. All this advice would also help in reducing the level and making things at home a little bit better.
All right. Okay.
Mm.
So can I assume that a treatment of drugs or antihistamines, what have you, would be the last call of action if we could avoid it?
I don't think it's the last call of action, because usually by the time the parents are presenting to the doctor, they're actually quite symptomatic, so it's quite significant.
Right.
And obviously the medications would work a lot faster than, you know, vacuuming your house every 2 weeks. You know, so I think it's together, but there's no point being on medications if you're also not going to reduce the amount of the trigger. So you get to the source, you treat the symptoms. And of course, there are other therapies that parents can consider, such as immunotherapy mm-hmm. for house dust mites. But this comes a little bit later as well. But all these are in consideration. It's really multifactorial and everything plays a part.
Okay. How aware are parents of how common it is that children develop allergies like this?
Well, allergies, depending on the type, affect between 10 and 30% of all children,
mm-hmm.
Especially eczema or allergic rhinitis. So it's fairly common. I mean, talking about almost one-third of the population. And a lot of things such as allergic rhinitis are carried into adulthood, so it's important that they are addressed fairly early, especially if you're considering treatments such as immunotherapy. So if your child does have a chronic cough lasting more than 4 weeks, or, you know, a perpetual blocked or runny nose, especially during COVID-19 where viral transmission risk is lower, you probably may want to consider having an allergy evaluation for that.
And where do they get that? Do they need a referral from a GP?
It depends on which route you're going to. So if you're wanting to go to the public hospitals, the restructured hospitals such as KK Hospital or NUH, then you probably would need a polyclinic referral. Of course, as a private patient, you can just call up and make an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
In the private sector, you don't need a referral unless it's under an insurance policy that requires you to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You can also just call in and make an appointment with your pediatric allergist.
Okay. This has been very, very useful. I told you before the microphones went live that it's been a long time since my children needed pediatricians. So some of this was pretty rusty to me until you started talking and went, oh yeah, I remember that. We've been speaking to Dr. Alison Joanne Lee, pediatrician, SBCC Baby and Child Clinic, about caring for our children's health in the new normal. Dr. Lee, thank you very, very much for the time.
Thank you, Clarissa, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg.
or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.